Welcome to the Black History Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Nishad Carrington. So let me start this episode by saying that we received a little bit of concern from some listeners and subscribers a couple of weeks ago, and actually through the last couple of weeks, when we've missed our posting deadlines. So, you know, let me publicly state right here that I apologize for that. We have surely been a little bit behind in updating the podcast's website as well, but I assure you, right here and right now, that it has been for a very valid and good reason. Okay, so to all of those who wrote in, I know that we tried to definitely respond to you all individually, but allow me to state again here publicly, thank you for your concern. You know, and that's really from the bottom of the heart. You know, as really a startup podcasting venture, it really felt good to have the questions and, you know, just know that someone's out there on the other end. I guess what it really amounts to is the fact that, you know, it's kind of that feeling that each week we've come to raise your expectations for not only the information regarding the diaspora, but our episodes. You know, and that's really what this boils down to, is about spreading our knowledge and spreading our history, and the fact that you all have, you know, took it upon yourself to write in and say, yo, where is my show for the week? Is everything okay? Has the podcast stopped? Blah, blah, blah. It tells us that you want more. So thank you. Now, let me also say this. Like I said, you know, the delays have been for good reason, you know, and really we've been very, very busy. You know, if you pay very close attention to, you know, some of the words that I say, especially during my tangents, you may notice that recently I actually recorded an episode and we broadcasted an episode from the city of St. Louis, Missouri. And as a matter of fact, if you want to go back and listen, that was actually the episode of the Colored Hockey League of the Maritimes. At the very beginning of December, I and my fiance, who you all were introduced to for the first time on the Susie King Taylor episode with her wonderful voiceovers, we got some pretty good feedback on that too, and I'm sure I'll share some in coming episodes. I don't want her to get too big of the big head. She and I, my law practice, and vicariously the podcast, relocated to St. Louis. On top of that though, you know, we've been actually very hard at work to upgrade our hosting services, prepare really get better hardware in the studio that we have. One of the comments that I received back was actually saying that, you know, sometimes people struggle to hear me. And so I think some part of that is just an upgrade of microphones. And so we're working on that too. We're getting that done. More than anything, we've been actually working hard to prepare new episodes for you. You know, there's a lot of research that goes into this. I don't know if any of you have ever been a part of a podcasting venture, but it's more work than it seems than just hopping on the mic, especially when you're dealing with history. Anywho, let me keep going. So the other two things I'm actually really, really, really proud and excited for. Now, I'll give a little bit of a teaser. I can't say too much information, but all things in due time, okay? So we've really been in the preliminary stages very recently to actually develop a broadcasting partnership with the on-campus radio station for a HBCU. I'll be very happy to announce who and when and, you know, the schedule and all once that deal is done, hopefully sooner rather than later. You know, many of you may know, as I said in the welcome episode, that I'm actually a graduate of Morehouse College. It's not Morehouse. I wish it was. When I was there, we didn't have a radio station on campus. They may have one now. I don't know. Probably should find that out. But if you go to Morehouse and they do have a radio station, please, we'd be more than happy to have the show rebroadcast on Morehouse's radio station. I know Clark Atlanta had one when I was there. I can't say that I've actually listened to it though when I was a student. I didn't really listen to the radio much, so please don't hold that against me. But, you know, we would love to broadcast our show out to as many HBCUs on campus stations, you know, PWI stations, doesn't matter. You know, get in contact with us and let's see what we can work out. On top of that, something I'm really, really excited for as well, and I'll probably say even less about this than the other thing. You know, we've been kind of hard at work actually to establish a new venture that, again, I'll be proud, super proud to announce when the time is right. To give you just a little bit, it's all focused on the youth and actually getting their voices out. their perspectives, their voices, their opinions, their thoughts, and just really developing critical thinking skills within the youth. And it does have to do around podcasting. I won't say too much more than that for right now. We are, again, working hard to get that moving forward too. So I know I didn't tell you too much, but just know that we are moving. You know, this podcast has been growing week over week. You know, every single week we check our stats and we've been getting more subscribers. We've been getting more listeners. We get more downloads every single week. And so that just tells us that we're doing something right. You know, there's always room for improvement. If you have any thoughts, let us know. But we're doing something right and it feels good to see that growth. So again, for every single listener, if this is your first episode or if this is what, I think we're up to episode 11 at this point, thank you. You know, keep listening every week, write into us, let us know what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong, what you want to hear differently, see differently done. You know, we take all of those things and we put them together and hopefully every week we get better and better and better. So with all of that said, and more importantly, what I didn't say to hopefully keep you in suspense for, you know, future announcements, let's get into today's episode, all right? Vicente Ramon Guerrero Saldana was born August 10th, 1782, in a town called Tixla, about 100 kilometers from the port city of Acapulco, to Pedro Guerrero and Maria de Guadalupe Saldana. Now, if you haven't figured out already, if you didn't recognize the quote, port city of Acapulco or the town he was born in called Tixla, we're talking about the country of Mexico, okay? We're talking about Mexico in the late 18th century, all right? So, Vicente's father was a mestizo and his mother was a woman of African descent. Now, for those of you who don't know, and I'm going to assume it's probably most people because I know myself, I had never heard this term mestizo before. A mestizo is actually an ethnic group in Mexico. Everybody ain't Mexican. There are ethnic groups. Mestizo is one of them. So their ancestry was actually of a mixed descent, okay? So it's that being a mixture of the indigenous people of Mexico and Spaniards from Europe, but also having traces of both African and Asian as well. Now, if we are going to take the, I guess really apply the one drop rule, as was done here in the United States so many years ago, then we're essentially looking at Black Mexicans. And with his mother being of African descent, Vicente was for all intents and purposes Black, okay? Vicente's father came from a relatively wealthy family, with his father's side of the family owning property and being landlords, as well as having members who were rich farmers and traders with very, very broad and developed business connections throughout the southern parts of Mexico. His father's side of the family as well were members of the Spanish militia and additionally contributed by being famed gun and cannon makers. Now, in November of 1810, Mexico is in turmoil, okay? Because the revolution for Mexican independence from Spanish rule broke out. And though Vicente's family was devout supporters of Spanish rule, Vicente expressed a great deal of anti-colonialist sentiment. And within 2 years of the revolution's onset, Vicente had risen to the rank of lieutenant colonel and was responsible for organizing forces in the southern regions of the country. One of the most popular stories regarding Vicente's leadership actually came in 1819. His father was getting old in his own right and came and begged him to go to the Viceroy of New Spain, offer his sword, lay it at the Viceroy's feet, and surrender. Now, Vicente instead responded to this in the presence of his own soldiers and his own men to say, "Compañeros, this old man is my father. He has come to offer me rewards in the name of the Spaniards. I have always respected my father, but my motherland comes first." Now, this line was indicative of Vicente's commitment to the Mexican Rebellion. During the period of revolution, which lasted from 1810 to 1821, Vicente was one of the few figures that fought for independence the entire time, with many of the military and political leaders changing sides and alliances repeatedly. The line, "My motherland comes first," is the motto for the southern state of Guerrero that was named for him following his death. To this day, as a matter of fact, There is a plaque that is maintained on the wall of Vincente's former home in Tixla that actually has a misquotation of his actual words. The plaque today reads, "Independence and liberty, or death. My country comes before my father." Now, like I said, that's a misquotation, but the general gist of what he was getting at with that spirit of rebellion is there. Now, between the years of 1810 and 1821, Vincente won a total of 491 battles, using primarily guerrilla tactics in his victories against the Spanish army. While he is afforded the credit in the course of history, he instead credited his fellow soldiers to say, "It wasn't me, but the people who fought and triumphed." In the face of Vincente's words against the Viceroy actually sent an army against Vincente under the command of the flamboyant and opportunistic Agustin de Iturbide. The army under Iturbide left Mexico City on November 16, 1820, and surely was bested by Vincente's forces due to his tactical skill and much better knowledge of the terrain. But Iturbide, true to his chameleon-type nature, sent a letter to Vincente on January 10, 1821. In the letter, Iturbide proposed that the two of them, in fact, join forces and fight for Mexican independence. The two men would combine their forces into what became known as the Tragante Army, or also known as the Army of the Three Guarantees. We'll get back to the Three Guarantees in just a second. And the two of them together with their combined forces prepared to attack Mexico City. The then new viceroy, Juan O. Duoju, realized that the situation was hopeless and agreed to Mexican independence. Now, on September 27, 1821, the Tragante Army marched into the capital. Following the success of the Mexican Revolution, the political climate of Mexico became swamped with turmoil. The Vincente-Iturbide collaboration developed into the Three Guarantees proposal, which was supposed to provide the citizenry of Mexico with the following. 1. Mexico to become an independent constitutional monarchy. 2. The abolishment of the country's racialized class system, differentiating between Spaniards and Creoles and Mestizos and Indians. And 3. The institutionalization of Catholicism as the official state religion. But, as most partnerships eventually do, the one between Vincente and Iturbide went sour. Now, on May 21st, 1822, the vainglorious Iturbide proclaimed himself Emperor Agustin I. The coronation for Iturbide was sparked by a spontaneous demonstration in May, and actually, it was led by a picked band of his own soldiers that he then accepted the imperial crown. Okay? So, though Vincente initially supported Iturbide's claim, by early 1823, only about a year later, he was then in revolt against Iturbide. Vincente broke away from Iturbide and instead aligned himself with Antonio Lopez de Santa Anna and Guadalupe Victoria. The three of them backed a plan of Casa Mata, which amounted to a plan to abolish the monarchy in favor of a republic. When support for Iturbide's empire crumbled around March of 1823, Iturbide fled the country, and in 1824, a constitution was passed in Mexico, the first ever. Now, following Iturbide's abdication from his self-crowned emperorship, Mexico adopted what was then the U.S. practice of choosing a president and vice president from different political parties. Guadalupe Victoria was elected as the first president of Mexico in 1824, with his vice president being General Nicolas Bravo, a conservative. Now, though Victoria served out his full four-year term, Bravo launched a rebellion against him late in that term in 1827. The rising was defeated by Vincente, actually who was Bravo's old comrade in arms, and Bravo was sent into exile. Now, after Guadalupe Victoria's four-year term was up in 1828, Vicente actually ran for the presidential position. Now, he ran against a man named Manuel Gomez Pedraza. Now, Pedraza came from the upper class of Mexico, and he actually won the popular vote in the election. But the military led vociferous demonstrations against him, being led, in fact, by Vicente's colleague, Santa Anna. Now, after this, the military uprising, which really was about a coup, Pedraza would renounce the position and flee the country for Europe. Following Pedraza's departure, Vicente was installed as president on April 1st, 1829. Here we get to the topic of today's episode, Vicente Guerrero, the first Black president of North America. I think right here is actually a really good place for us to take a really quick break, hear a word from one of our sponsors, let's pay some bills, and we'll be right back with the rest of this story. This episode of the Black History Podcast is brought to you by Make Music Count. The mission of Make Music Count is to increase elementary and secondary students' mathematical skill development through piano playing, while all the while reducing their math anxiety. By incorporating music into each lesson, students become engaged through music while simultaneously learning mathematical concepts. Each lesson is based on learning musical notes in a song. Each note is derived through the student solving a mathematical equation that can vary from addition and subtraction all the way up to algebraic equations. Therefore, solving math equations leads directly to students learning to play the piano, and more importantly, having a much more positive attitude towards math. Check our friends out at makemusiccount.com. Now we get back to the show. Welcome back. When we left you before, Vicente had just ascended to the presidency after the popular elected Pedraza had flew the coup to Europe. See what I did there? Well, Vicente wasn't president for very long, but he surely was effective in implementing sweeping reforms and changes to help the working class and extending additional rights to the indigenous people of Mexico. He instituted taxes on the rich. He provided protections to small businesses, he abolished the death penalty, and advocated for villages to elect their own councils of representatives. He was a very strong advocate for social equality as well, and even took to signing his official correspondences as, quote, Citizen Guerrero, end quote. While those are surely sweeping changes, the likes of which I can't even think that we've necessarily seen a president of the United States be bold enough to undertake all of them. The greatest instituted change by Vicente came on September 16, 1829, when Vicente abolished slavery in the country of Mexico. But unfortunately, it would appear that this step was just a bit too far to the liking of many, as it was this action that ultimately led to his downfall. Texas, in fact, still a part of Mexico at the time, and being the greatly progressive place that it was and still is today, I really hope and pray that you can see and feel my sarcasm that I inserted right there. Well, Texas threatened to revolt against this change, and being backed by its class of white American slaveholders actually ended up being successful in getting Vicente to exclude the Texas territory from the Abolitionary Declaration. Even more dissatisfaction with Vicente erupted from the upper classes and other ambitious military leaders, including his old friend Santa Anna. Now, attacks were mounted against Vicente and his cabinet members from the more conservative factions of the country. It even ultimately led to his Minister of War's resignation. Now, in December of 1830, a major revolt was staged against Vicente and he was removed from office. Being the ever-populist leader that he was, however, following his removal, Vicente returned to the southern Mexican states and attempted to gather popular support in a rebellion attempt. But this effort would prove to be futile, as Vicente was captured, and the newly minted Minister of War, José Antonio Facio, paid a Genoese captain 50,000 pesos to invite Vicente aboard his boat in Acapulco. Once aboard, Vicente, thinking that I guess it was probably for some strategy or peace talks, he was kidnapped and taken into custody for trial. Vicente was then executed on Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1831. His legacy would live on, however. He, in fact, was the grandfather of the Mexican politician and intellectual Vicente Riva Palacio. Excuse me for butchering that name. And, you know, but here's the thing. His execution is really kind of a sad tragedy to inflict on someone who was just so steadfast and headstrong in his efforts to improve his country's lot, especially that of the lower class, the indigenous, and the marginalized. But no matter what, despite otherwise widespread popularity, Vicente Ramon Guerrero Saldana's downfall was ultimately marked by racial and classist fears of the time. In fact, a Mexican history professor, he really summed it up all up very, very well when he remarked that, quote, Guerrero's execution was perhaps a warning to men considered as socially and ethnically inferior not to dare to dream of becoming president. Many of our other episodes in this series will conclude with a point or remark regarding the legacy that the individual person or topic left in its wake. And because, you know, really because of the short time period of his presidency, initially I would say that that's a bit tougher to do in this instance. However, there is something to be garnered and learned from the legacy of Vicente Guerrero. His dark skin color and determination to incorporate the masses into a new republic made him a figure to fear for the white elite in northern and central Mexico, which in turn guaranteed that he would be grossly overlooked in the annals of history. Now, as a side note, I can kind of think of a US equivalent to Vicente. And this figure looms over many of our episodes here at the Black History Podcast, Marcus Garvey. Let's parallel what was stated about Vicente to that of Garvey for just a real brief moment, okay? So, dark skin color, definitely true of Garvey. And in comparison to the rest of Mexicans, definitely true of Vicente as well. A strong determination to incorporate the masses into a new republic. Well, that's clearly true of Vicente, but if we look at Garvey's efforts to create a new country for the diaspora, I'd venture to say that the two are very similar in that same labored struggle. Finally, the instillation of fear in elite whites that led to erasure from the written prose of history. Well, it's pretty clear that the uprising and base of support that Vicente garnered from the indigenous people as well as the lower class of Mexico made many of the upper echelon interests of the country quite unsettled. And you know what? I would venture to argue that Garvey did the same with his efforts of making African Americans, Caribs, and continental Africans feel empowered through his own efforts. I would say that both of them embody those same spirits of rebellion and rising of the lower classes that really made the power elite uncomfortable and unsettled them in their seats of cushioned delight. And you know, and here's the thing. I'd say it's relatively safe to say that Vicente was Mexico's first genuine revolutionary. Though he came from a more well-to-do working-class family, don't get that twisted, he did come from a working-class family, that didn't prevent or stop him from aligning himself with those who needed support the most, keeping himself honorable to the utmost degree, exhibiting the most heartfelt and steadfast dedication to, really, his representative people, his soldiers, and his family legacy as well. He became president on the backs of a Mexico City uprising. And though he was only president for 1 year, actually less than a year, closer to 9 months, his impact was profound. He abolished slavery. He expelled the Spaniards from Mexico, and he successfully defended an attempted Spanish reinvasion in 1829 as well. We didn't touch on that part. There's a lot of history that goes into that. Well, if this was Mexican or Spanish American history, that definitely would be an episode in itself, but that was a lot of history that went into that. But yes, he was responsible for defending an attempted Spanish reinvasion in Mexico as well. Now, here's a little bit more context to the nature of Vicente's legacy, okay? As we've mentioned more than once, he was responsible for the abolishment of slavery in September of 1829. But what we didn't mention is that he conducted this act 4 years before Canada did it in 1833, and he did it more than 3 decades before the United States would abolish slavery in 1865. If that's not revolutionary thought that challenges the prevailing notion of society and cultural norms, then I don't know what is. If I give you one takeaway from this episode and one takeaway from the legacy of Vicente, it would be this. Vicente is and always will be a representation of a region, a cultural and physical minority of people of color, and a radical populist demand for mass democracy. He is in fact an appealing symbol of radicalism and the demands of the non-white people, maintaining in the process being an advocate of popular sovereignty. So, with all that said, that's it. Vicente Ramon Guerrero Saldana, North America's first Black president. Now, in closing, I truly hope that you enjoyed this episode. I feel like I actually got a little more spirited in this one than I do in a lot. You know, something about his legacy, you know, just rising from the bottom, started at the bottom, now we're here. but, you know, I hope you really learned something intriguing, you know, something you didn't know before. I know if most people say, who's the first Black president in North America? Most people probably say Obama. And while that's true in the United States, it's not true in North America. We had a president of African descent who was Black in Mexico in the early 1800s. But anywho, I hope you're ready for our next adventures. You know, please be sure to check us out each and every week for new and updated topics. In the event you have any questions or general commentary about this episode or any other previous episode that we've done, please feel free to visit our website at www.blackhistorypodcast.com or www.thisiscarrington.com/podcast. Send us emails to info@thisiscarrington.com. Okay, so that is our official email address for the podcast we've been using. If you hit the contact us button on our website, you will go to the same place, info@thisiscarrington.com. Now, as we develop and grow, you will find an archive of each and every episode, plans for future episodes. I hope if you take a look down at those at the bottom of that page, they get you excited as to what might come, because we don't do them in order. We just kind of toss them in the foray and keep you on your toes every week. Now, you'll find additional links to books and resources that'll help you in your journey to self-enlightenment. Generally, those links to books and resources will come along with the individual episode that they accompany. Please, again, give us a little bit of time. We are working hard to update everything so that we're all on one page and one accord. We encourage you to share our episodes with your friends, your family, your children. You know what? Thank you, because clearly you've been doing it from the growth that we've been seeing. I appreciate it. Our history needs to be known. That's something that I think we really, really, truly espouse here at the Black History Podcast, is that our history is important. You know, this little bit of history, he's been almost written out of the course of history. But it's there, and we should know it. So send us your feedback as well. Suggest new topics, events, or people that we should cover. Or if you just wish to drop us a line and give us your thoughts or perspectives to anything we've done, we'll make every best effort to include listener mail or commentary to future episodes. Please, again, as we take this journey together, we will do our absolute utmost best to present the diaspora in the most objective light, with some occasional commentary presented. You all know how I am by now. But if you come across any errors or mistakes, please let us know, because I'm sure that you know it by now. But as we like to say here, only steel can sharpen steel. Take care, and we'll see you next week.